Samer is one of the few designers in Egypt to use a traditional method to design on fabrics. The art consists of patterns created by applying melted wax onto cloth before dipping it in dye or painting over it with a brush. The fabric is put into boiling water in order to melt the wax. The ancient Egyptians used the batik fabric mostly to wrap the coffins and mummies. However, the difficulty of mastering the art caused its disappearance.
Batik has disappeared in Egypt because no one shared their skill. As a teacher, I find that it is very important to provide as much training as I can because people realize how difficult it is when they start learning the techniques.
Samer has now skillful artists in her workshop who design colorful fabric using the technique. Samer says her goal is to produce unique designs that are particularly identified as to Egyptian and represent the country's rich cultural heritage.
You can find tin boxes in every house, with people often throwing them away after consuming what they had inside. But an old lady in Belgium has turned it into an obsession for years to fill her home with these fascinating containers. 83-year-old Madame Dardenne has gathered around 60,000 vintage tin boxes in a span of 30 years. The empty containers of all sizes now occupy four other houses. They once used to hold all kinds of goods, ranging from coffee, biscuits, tobacco, tea and soap to shoe polish, are now piled high all over the building that belongs to Dardenne. Some of these boxes, according to her, come from as far as India and Japan. Dardenne says it all started with a chocolate box that was given to her with a painting of a blonde girl in a blue hat.
I consider this box to be the first of my collection. It is a box of Belgian Côte d'Or chocolates that a relative of my husband gave me, believing that I was interested in boxes.
She sees the boxes as history books with decorations and writings on them describing major events and reflecting contemporary culture. The collection is the largest in the world, listed by the Guinness Book of Records. Located in eastern Belgium, the museum can be visited by appointment. Humans have damaged the environment perhaps more than any other species, but there are always some who go out of their way to help animals in distress. Juan Carlos Rodriguez and his wife run a sloth rescue center in the lush outskirts of the Venezuelan capital, Caracas. They have so far saved over 45 sloths. The couple decided to start helping the furry mammals last year after running into a sloth that had been badly injured. They saved him and called him Chewie, after a character in the popular Star Wars franchise. Juan and his wife are now alone in their life-saving journey. As their vet friends also help them with services and donations. The coronavirus pandemic has disrupted lives all around the world, but it's important to try to stay fit for humans and animals alike. Penguins in an open zoo in Thailand have been keeping their daily routines, although no visitors are allowed due to COVID-19 restrictions. They are regularly taken out of their air-conditioned enclosure so they can enjoy a walk or swim. The 41 flightless birds consume nearly 25 kilograms of fresh fish each day. The cute animals at the zoo are aged from 1 month to 18 years old.
South Korean medical workers manning drive-through coronavirus testing centers have a new way to cool off and rest amid hot summer days. Recovery buses. The medical workers are now able to enjoy their breaks at these buses, which are equipped with air conditioning, cold water and snacks. The workers are allowed to take off their protective suits that trap heat and create an environment difficult to tolerate. Some of the buses also have shower booths and bunk beds to help the medical workers deal with their hard work. They say the buses are refreshing.
I almost feel like I'm stuck in a heat dome, like in a car with the air conditioner off in the middle of summer. It's so hot that it's even hard to breathe. But when I come here during the break time and rest in a much cooler and more pleasant environment like an igloo, I can recharge and work cheerfully in the afternoon.
These buses were first designed and used as resting places for Korean police officers and firefighters. Now, 22 of them are deployed to testing centers across the country. The government is considering deploying more recovery buses amid rising temperature and a new wave of coronavirus infections.
An aquarium in the French capital, Paris, is celebrating the birth of a baby black-tip shark. The female shark is 55 centimeters long and weighs 560 grams. She's currently quarantined in a small pond so she wouldn't come under attack by adult sharks. Officials at the aquarium say she'll be ready to swim amongst other sharks in 3 to 4 months. She was born last week at the aquarium, an event the caretakers say is very rare.
It's a rare event for us, which hadn't happened here for the past 5 years. The birth is quite rare in aquariums and in captivity in general. In fact, there are often embryos that won't survive, or they're sometimes stillborn. That's what makes it a rare event, which also occurs at night. We had the chance to observe it during the day, which allowed us to intervene very quickly, and we're able to recover the little one.
The International Union for the Conservation of Nature has designated black-tip sharks as a vulnerable species. It's particularly poached in some countries for their distinctive fins. The marvelous creatures have a torpedo-shaped body and often spin out of water while eating. They have specialized cells in their snouts that detect the electric current of nearby prey.
A Turkish farmer hails the miraculous survival of two baby goats from deadly wildfires. Sergin Bayat said seeing his livestock threatened by flames was the most difficult moment in his life. Bayat said although he lost 8 of his animals in the fire, he found new life after the survival of a newborn goat. He said the mother of the kid had been killed in a wildfire. Bayat called it a miracle. But there was also another baby goat.
We found another goat amidst the wildfire. She has a baby. There you go. Miracle number 2.
Bayat says although his farm was severely damaged, he's now over the moon at the survival of the baby goats. A massive forest fire in southern Turkey broke out on Wednesday, fueled by strong winds. Wildfires are common in southern Turkey in the summer, but local authorities say the latest fires have covered a much bigger area.
Cats are notoriously volatile animals, as we all know. One moment they are purring for your attention, and the next they can't stand being touched. Now, a Canadian firm has come up with an app that can help you better understand your feline friends. The app is called Tabby and works with artificial intelligence. The AI's algorithm was trained at a clinic in the city of Calgary. The developers of Tabby hope their product can be useful for novice cat owners and vets alike. The app can also help monitor the health of cats. Tabby's developer explains how the app functions.
It uses artificial intelligence, so specifically machine learning, and it's coupled with the feline grimace scale. And what the feline grimace scale is, it's a way for humans to be able to determine if a cat is in pain or not based on the ear positioning, the eye positioning, the muzzle, whiskers, things like that. And so we were able to train a machine using machine learning and a series of images to be able to make that determination. So if you're somebody who has a cat but you don't have that training, you can just use the app and it can help you determine this, how your cat is doing.
Sounds very useful. The tablet is not perfect, though, and runs into problems when trying to decipher the mood of black cats. Despite the hiccups, the developers say the program will get better at doing its task as its artificial intelligence develops through practice.
The Light is a short bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields, like animals' life, cultural events, funny trendy news, and more from every corner of the world.
Humans have damaged the environment, perhaps more than any other species, but there are always some who go out of their way to help animals in distress. Known in Cyprus as Birdman, 28-year-old Konstantinos Antonio is a wildlife veterinarian. Every year, he saves hundreds of sick or wounded wild birds. The animals brought to him are usually found by regular people. Konstantinos says climate change has made the task of assisting birds more urgent as their survival becomes harder and harder. The Cypriot environmentalist usually frees the animals after treatment in the presence of other people in order to raise awareness about the issue. A vertical forest has transformed the Chinese megacity of Chengdu into a concrete jungle, making the lives of the residents greener. Each unit at the 8-tower complex has a balcony with around 20 types of luxuriant plants and greenery. The green space filters air and noise pollution while creating a spectacular view. The project in the southwestern city was completed in 2018, and all of the 826 apartments were sold out at the time.
I think it's quite good. Their quality is pretty good and much better than my old houses. There is good when you wake up in the morning, and the green trees are good for us elderly people. They are good for our eyes.
Besides all the benefits, the apartments have a major problem. They have been overrun by plants and invaded by mosquitoes. The issue has forced some of the occupants to move out. Other cities around the world, such as New York and Copenhagen, have also launched similar green housing projects.
The best visited multimedia exhibit in the world known as Van Gogh Live. The experience has opened in Munich after being postponed a number of times due to COVID-19.
Van Gogh is einfach der berühmteste.
Van Gogh is just the most famous artist in the world. He is also a prototype artist. He is the last artist who then tragically dies at the end. His life story was just fascinating, and that's why he is Van Gogh. And of course, his artworks are fascinating.
Featuring some of Van Gogh's best-known works, the exhibition is not only a feast for the eyes, but the senses with music and smells to accompany the colorful projections. The exhibit is supposed to smell like the countryside because of where Van Gogh lived. However, the organizers say visitors cannot really experience the feeling due to wearing masks. Van Gogh Alive, the experience was first presented in Singapore in 2011. Since then, the multimedia exhibit has been seen in 70 cities and has attracted some 6 million visitors. Conservation measures have managed to bring the world's most endangered cat back from the brink of extinction. In 2002, there were less than 100 Iberian lynx left in the wild. The situation prompted officials in Spain and Portugal to save the animal through a captive breeding program. They also tried hard to fight poaching and reintroduce rabbits, the cat's major prey, into the wild. By the end of 2020, there were over 1,100 Iberian lynx living in the two countries, most of them in Spain's southern region of Andalusia.
The main cause of death for wildlife, certainly in the natural environment, is related to human activities, roadkill, poaching, unwanted encounters. So the less interaction they have with humans, the better.
Despite the successful measures, the International Union for Conservation of Nature still lists the animal as endangered. It's estimated that the species will be out of danger only when its population surpasses 3,000. Urban development, hunting, and roadkill are the major reasons of death for wild lynxes these days. Brazilians have come up with a creative idea to combat population, that is pollution and global warming, repopulating mangroves. The project is aimed at reforesting an area equal to 75 football fields in Guanabara Bay. Organizers hope to make the biggest mangrove garden in the country. Mangroves, which usually grow in tropical regions, are essential to maintaining water quality and clarity. They filter and trap sediments, heavy metals, and other pollutants. Mangrove forests are also able to store 3 to 4 times more carbon than other forests.
Tehran municipality has inaugurated an art garden that puts on display Iran's art and culture. Cultural facility aims to reconnect visitors with Iran's rich past amid increasing preoccupation with modern lives.
This man changed the world.
Allahu Akbar, Khomeini Rahbar, Allahu Akbar, Khomeini Rahbar.
Our bosses couldn't cope with the idea of an 80-year-old Ayatollah, which they didn't even know what an Ayatollah was, who lived on garlic and onions and yogurt, directing a revolution that was about to topple America's most important ally.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of Allah, the Exalted, the Most Compassionate, the Most Merciful. Salam, hello and welcome to our audience, and a particularly warm welcome to our regular listeners of our program, The Man Who Changed the World, and I'm your host on this program, Ijaz Hussain. Once again, I'm joined by Dr. Mahdi Tarabi, who's been giving us wonderful insights on various aspects of this great man's life, and of course, it's a program dedicated to his memory, and may God bless his great soul. And Dr. Mahdi Tarabi, salam and welcome to the program, first of all.
Alaykum salam rahmatullah. Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you. Dr. Mahdi Tarabi, we're talking about economic pressure on Iran.
Yes.
And how the Imam, may God bless his great soul, dealt with that.
Yes. How do you think he dealt with that?
I think he dealt with it beautifully by saying that, you know, we'll create a great wall around Iran and let us grow our own food. If that's the correct quotation.
He actually said, if they wall us.
If they wall us.
If they put a big wall, it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
Allah will send his rain, we will grow our own food.
Allah will send his rain and grow it. I mean, this is wonderful. It comes right out of the Quranic text. I mean, he's taken me back to several very important stories in the Quran where, you know, Allah is the rizq giver, isn't it? I mean, that's the thing. I mean, this is where we as Muslims, you know, sometimes
are
we
weak.
Wonder.
Are weak.
Yeah, exactly. We don't have enough trust in Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, and yet he is the one. There's a wonderful passage somewhere where Prophet Abraham says to his followers, I don't mean to digress, but we're basically talking about, he says, he is the one who created me. When I was sick, he gave me health. When I was hungry, he fed me. You know, there's some verses like this which I know I went through, and they're beautiful.
Right.
In terms of who it is that really raises you and who is
exactly.
The one who really sustains you. And, of course, that's what we shouldn't lose sight of. And this is what the Imam points out over and over again, because he's his beloved. Imam Khomeini, God bless his soul, loves Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
یه ملتی که شهادت را می طلبند و دعا می خوان برای شهادت، اینها از دخالت نظامی می ترسند.
Does a nation that seeks martyrdom and even prays for martyrdom fear military intervention? Does it fear an economic blockade? If the whole world closes the doors of their countries to us, a country with a population of about 30 million, if they build a wall around Iran and imprison us here in Iran, we prefer it over having our doors open so that plunderers invade our country.
ما میخوایم چه بکنیم که به این تمدنی که از توحش بدتر است، این تمدنی که حیوانات بیابان.
What are we to do with this civilization which is worse than beasts? A civilization which the behavior of desert animals are better than it? Why would we ever need this civilization? This gate of civilization which the deposed Shah wanted to open to us means world powers should have full control over us and may take away all our possessions and then send us a couple of puppets. It means that they may take our oil and build a base for themselves. We need this great civilization for what? Is this civilization?
ما این تمدن بزرگ را می‌خوام چی بکنیم؟ این تمدن این پدر و پسر و خصوصا این پسر کشور ما را به عقب راند و همه چیز ما را به باد داد.
This father and son, and particularly this son, brought backwardness to our country and ruined everything, such that if even now all our nation join their hands, as they have alhamdulillah done so, and intend to repair the damages that have been done to us in these 50-odd years, as well as the damages done to our country by America 20-odd years ago, it would take us many years to repair them.
ما میخوام چه کنیم روابط داشته باشیم با اونهایی که میخوان ما را بشاپن.
Why should we have ties with those who want to loot us? Is our relationship with them anything but that of a plunderer and one who is being plundered? Why should we need this? Let them close all the doors on us and impose an economic blockade on us. We ourselves have a vast country. We have water. Allah gives us rain. We ourselves will sow and eat from our own crops. We have no need of these issues. They must not try to frighten a nation which wants to give its life so that its independence is preserved. This independence and freedom that we have achieved is a heavenly gift. It is a divine gift which has come to us, and we are obliged to preserve it. If we do not preserve this, we have been ungrateful of Allah's blessing. We must preserve this blessing. We are not afraid of these threats that they make by bringing their naval vessels to the Persian Gulf and elsewhere and here and there. These are a thing of the past. Before, yes. In the past, it was such that when they wanted to impose a treaty, someone would let out a groan, and, for example, a vessel would enter the Persian Gulf, and the issue was settled.
So, yeah, your take on that, please, Dr.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. Yeah. Well, you know, I think that quote that we heard, I mean, says it all. There's really not much more we can add to that.
Sure.
He's basically saying that, you know, they always threaten you with economic pressure, sanctions.
That's right, yes.
And he said, you know, a people who pray for martyrdom, who, you know, are connected to Allah, they don't, this stuff doesn't scare them.
It doesn't. No.
Military threats don't scare them. Economic
sanctions, you know, don't,
sanctions
scare
don't scare them, whatever. Yes. Mm. And unfortunately, this is the problem we have today, is that some Muslims, whether, you know, in generally in the Ummah or whether it's in Iran, they don't really believe Allah's promises.
Mm.
They're not certain that Allah will help you.
Mm.
They say, yeah, okay, that's what it says in the Quran, and I believe it every now and then, and maybe, but maybe also we need to, you know, try to be good with Tawgut. And you know, this is the beauty when we talked about, you know, in a revolution and in this great movement, having a great leader like Imam and showing us the way. Because obviously those people who have power and wealth, they will do anything to maintain their wealth and power.
Exactly.
And once they see things like military threats or coup d'etat attempts or the invasion of Saddam, eight-year war, whatever, it doesn't reach its goal, they will go towards the economic side of things.
Sure.
And as the Supreme Leader has said so many times, their main focus today is economics.
Yes.
And this is why we have the resistance economy that was mentioned by the Supreme Leader, which is, it doesn't mean a sort of, you know, bare bones economy. It means an economy that is able to resist these political pressures.
Pressures, exactly.
And this has to do with our internal capabilities and in our internal power.
Exactly.
If we are able to have a strong
self-reliant economy
domestically, then this will, you know, in many ways and as a multiplier, be able to resist those pressures that come from the outside.
Exactly.
And the bottom line is this, in the case of Iran. As long as the model for Iranian economy is selling oil to import stuff, whether that stuff is from Europe or America
or elsewhere,
or Russia or China or India or wherever, we're going to have problems.
Yes.
So we have to change that equation, which is, you know, sell the oil, the raw oil, the crude oil.
Crude oil.
For cash, and then use that cash to buy our stuff, which is basically what the, you know, the gentlemen in the south of in the Persian Gulf area do. This is their model of living.
Right. Yes.
And believe me, it's more than just economics. It's a way of life. It's a lifestyle, as they say.
Yes.
And this is where you see, and this is connected to when you see the Supreme Leader talking about Islamic lifestyle and Islamic civilization. A Muslim, an Islamic society, has to be self-reliant, has to earn its income through work and through the power of its mind and the ability to innovate and to produce and to make things that are of benefit to humanity. And what we see with oil, unfortunately, oil is a good thing. I'm not against oil. Nobody's against oil.
No.
But what we see with oil as a reality of the matter is that you have the oil industry in Iran, which creates a lot of the income for the nation. And yet it's less than 2% of the population that's employed by it. It's in the nature of the thing, okay? A nation that has mass employment and good jobs, you know, it's not going to happen just with the oil industry, okay? Assuming we have a doubling or tripling of this industry, if we're going to say that there is a concomitant amount of employment rise, which never happens, but let's just say, theoretically, you would have 4% of the population in the oil industry. Well, you know, that's not enough.
No.
So we can't rely on the oil industry. And also, we can't rely on crude oil. We have to process it.
Yeah, you have to diversify your economy.
Processing it means you're value adding. It means you're creating, you know, refineries, which are more jobs, which are more proper, real jobs.
Jobs.
I say that as somebody, one of my grandfathers, his job was in the refinery for 34 years. So I know what that means. And it was a proper job. It was a good job. It was well paying. It helped him support his family and, you know, whatever, a large family. It's a proper, real industrial job. You remember those?
Sure.
You're an engineer?
Well, yes, we had them.
Remember?
Yes, and they're gone.
Right.
Now we've got a service economy, which doesn't mean anything.
Right. Starbucks.
Starbucks.
Latte.
And, you know, propping up private banks.
Right.
Which take away your money anyway.
Right.
So.
Right.
So the I have point more savings.
Exactly.
I'm bankrupt. And I make an appeal, actually, on this radio. That if there are any donations, please send them my way.
So you see what I'm saying? So in the best case...
Because of the austerity crisis. Right. Anyway.
In the best case, an oil industry, you turn it into an oil refinery industry. Refining industry.
Yes, that's right. You've got to diversify.
So
you've got to
make products. Which is petroleum products, everything from, you know, naphtha,
plastics to tarp, bitumen for roads, for example,
exactly.
Asphalt,
all the things that, you know, everybody knows, petrochemicals.
Sure.
And so on and so forth. You know, gasoline.
Yes.
Instead of, you know, importing gasoline, hey, why don't you export it?
Why don't you export it?
And the interesting thing is this. let me just tell you a little story.
Please.
Which is that, you know, for all these years during the various governments, for whatever reasons, which we're not going to get into now, but by the tone of my voice, you can tell what
I
mean.
Yes, exactly. I know what you're, where you're going with
the
this.
The gentleman decided not to increase gasoline production in Iran. Very strange thing.
Yes.
One of the major oil exporters of the world. Mm. You know, top three, top four.
Four, and it's not exporting
gasoline. And it's not making gasoline. Mm. And it's importing all its gasoline. You remember those cries?
Yes.
You know, a couple of years back, we're going to, you know, sanction Iranian gasoline. We're going to shut down Iran. Mm-hmm. Remember?
Yes, I remember those.
You recall this?
Yes.
Well, what did the government do within 6 months?
They produced more gasoline, didn't they?
Well, first, they rationed.
They rationed it.
Right.
So they could save it.
Right. Mm-hmm. That's number one.
Number one.
Then what did they do? They started making gasoline.
Making gasoline, yes.
So within 6 months, they a new oil minister comes in, Mr. Mirkazemi, right? Former Revolutionary Guard.
Sure.
Yes.
Yes.
You know, you know they're going to sanction him, right?
Mm. Well, he's individually sanctioned, isn't he?
I don't know.
I don't.
The point I'm trying to make
is maybe he's not allowed to go to the toilet. Or I don't know.
The point is, within 6 months, we're
producing.
We're not importing gasoline anymore.
It's fantastic, isn't it?
Okay. Whatever, the 30 years before?
Yes, you were importing it.
Right, 6 months?
6 months, you don't need to.
And nobody's talking about sanctioning Iran with gasoline anymore. Yes. I mean, I don't hear it. Have you heard it?
No, I've not heard it recently. Right?
Great example. Perfect example right there. Okay? So, what Imam is telling us, way back then, remember?
Yes.
This is the beginning.
This is the beginning,
this is
when
like,
there's nothing,
you know,
there.
Like the first year of the revolution. This is not like some thing that he has come to the conclusion after 35 years. He's saying at that time, when our economy was completely dependent
on the outside world,
as it had been for 100 plus years.
Yes, yes.
At that time, he's saying, who wants this kind of life and society? He says it's worse than animals to be dependent on these people.
Yes.
Okay. This is the beauty of Imam. Imam says things, he is the most clear about the matter, and he was the person that showed us the final
end result.
The end result. Right there, from
the beginning.
And it was all, as you mentioned, Quranic. Mm-hmm.
Quranic.
It was all from the Quran.
Yes.
Okay. Mm. And why do we say this is important? Because explaining this is key. Mm. We claim that the Quran is reality. The Quran is telling us
of
real cause and effect.
A real cause and effect, yes.
Okay. Mm. Quran is not like a story. It's not like some nice recitation.
Unfortunately.
Do you understand what I'm saying?
There's a point here.
It's a manual.
It's a manual. But the point is, this is the truth of the Quran itself. The Quran itself says that those who study this book or look at this book, for the vast majority, it's a collection of stories. But for those of us who are given insight and wisdom into the book by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, like Imam Khomeini, may God bless his great soul, they see lessons in this. Right. They see reality in it. And this is the difference. Unfortunately, most Muslims are like this, that they just take the superficial end of the Quran and they just think that it's just a collection of stories.
Right.
And it doesn't have any relevance or any bearing on the reality of, you know, running a state, for example. Right?
Exactly. And the point is, And the Supreme Leader talks about this as well, and he puts it this way. He says, you either believe and rely on Nusrat-e-Ilahi,
on
the help of God,
on the
support of God,
sure,
or you believe and rely on something else.
Exactly.
It's either this or that.
It's either this or that,
right?
Yeah.
Now, and the point is, look, for somebody who's not religious, who doesn't believe in God, whatever. All this stuff that we're saying doesn't
have any relevance.
We're talking to people who have in their heart and in their life are claiming and showing that they believe in God. Mm. Correct?
Correct.
This is what we're assuming.
Exactly.
That when you say that you believe in God, you really do.
True.
That, you know, when you pray and when you fast and when you're doing those things that you do, that you're doing this because you believe in God and God's power and God's presence in your life and all that.
Sure.
And then suddenly, when it comes to these pressures, suddenly you start doubting.
Mm.
This is what we're talking about.
I know.
Okay? And again, I'm addressing myself first. I'm not claiming to be better than anyone.
Absolutely.
I'm simply saying that do you really believe in God's promise? This is what you have to ask yourself.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay?
Exactly.
This is what you have to ask yourself.
Do you really believe in God's promise?
Okay. Mm. This is the point. God says that he is, and the Supreme Leader again mentioned this. He said there is ayah in the Quran. He says that it is incumbent on us. The victory of the Mu'min is incumbent on us. If the Mu'min follows what we say. And
exactly.
Allah is saying it's incumbent on me.
It's incumbent on me to give you victory. He's
doing taklif for himself.
Taklif for himself. Yeah.
It's wajib for me to give you. Sure. If you do these things, it's wajib for me.
Me.
SubhanAllah. Right?
Wonderful.
So why are you scared? Mm. Why are you worried if somebody, you know, threatens you with this or that?
That's where you get those wonderful metaphors in the Quran where God says, it wasn't you who threw the arrow, it was I. It wasn't you who threw the stone, it was I who threw the stone.
Exactly. So the point is simply that, you know, when Imam talks about these things, or when he talked about these things so many years ago, he hit the nail
on the head.
He you know, yes, it was bullseye.
I keep coming back to that head part again.
Right?
You're
it's
right.
Bullseye.
It's a bullseye.
Right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Way back then. None of this, you know, fancy schmancy economic stuff.
Yeah, homework stuff that we're all this analysis.
Right, GDP, PPP, whatever, none of that
stuff.
Yeah, doing
it on a power computer laptop
right.
to see
he
exactly what it is.
Very clearly, Quranically said, listen, the country that is dependent on others is Zalil.
It's enslavement.
Exactly. And we can't accept this. No. We would rather be walled in and not be disconnected from the rest of the world and grow our own food and eat it ourselves. Than to be part of this scheme.
Sure.
Again, what's the scheme? The scheme is you give us our oil, you give us your oil for cheap, we will give you whatever stuff you want. There is no dignity in this.
Exactly.
There is no dignity in this.
No.
There is no dignity in this. Mm. Don't be fooled by the expensive cars and the Burj Al Falah,
well,
you know?
This is
in Dubai and in Doha. You know, with the, you know, the branch of University of so-and-so and, you know, the branches of the Louvre. And this is all
nonsense.
It's all nonsense.
Because the point is this.
Okay.
And, I mean, I don't need to say this.
There's no dignity in this. You can't buy dignity.
Exactly.
From kafir.
Kafir.
You can't buy civilization from anyone.
Anyone. I mean, the thing is that what I want to point out is that, you know, I don't mean to preach to somebody who's from, you know, from LSE, you know, this is the thing. But at the end of the day, I mean, you tell me, because,
yes.
I mean, I am a layman as far as these things are concerned.
But you are an engineer.
Of course. Yes. But the thing is that, to me, it's all one-sided. That it's a one-way street.
Exactly. It's logical. I mean,
this is logical.
You don't have to be.
It's a one-way street. I mean, you don't have to be a genius to see this.
You don't have to be
But it's a one-way street. I mean, the moment the oil finishes or the gas finishes in, for example, UAE, that's the end of the story, isn't
it? It's only Abu Dhabi that has the oil.
Yeah, whatever.
You saw what happened to Dubai when the financial crisis happened.
It
all blew up.
It
and
all
he
blew
went
up
back
in
and
their
he
face.
Said, cousin, give me a little cash.
A little bit.
He said, you know what? I'll give you the cash. Just change the name of the tower. It's no longer Burj Al Arab. It's Burj Al Khalifa.
Burj Al Khalifa.
Right?
My God.
Because
anyway,
I bailed you out.
Staggering economics. But anyway, carry on, sir. Because that's what we're talking about. We're talking about the fact that when these resources are gone, and they're finite, they're limited, once they're gone...
It's about your dignity as a human being.
Being.
It's not about how much, you know, chickens you can stuff in your belly. Okay?
Not true.
Okay.
Very
there's
nice
there's it's called marginal utility. You know, after
marginal
the,
utility.
It's,
lovely.
After the
I'm
sixth,
being educated
after
on
the sixth
program,
chicken
yes.
that you stuff in your belly, you don't really want anymore.
No.
Right? There's a limit.
There's a limit to that. Of course there is.
You understand?
Absolutely.
And it goes down. The more you eat, the less it becomes for most of us.
Most of us.
there are some who can't eat enough, right?
They can't eat enough.
They can't get enough, right?
Yeah, that's a different story.
Okay.
Yes.
So,
unless you happen to be Abdul bin Aziz or something like that, in which all the chickens and sheep are consumed.
Right. Where there's a camel, in which there's a
sheep.
In which
there's a chicken as well.
And I don't know. I mean,
I don't know.
You tell me, right?
I haven't seen that.
Right? There's a camel in which there's a goat in which there's a
sheep.
In which there's a
couple of stuffed chickens or something. Yeah. Sure.
That's how they
eat. Yeah.
That's how they eat.
Yeah.
You know, what can I say? Eat. I wouldn't even call that eating.
I wouldn't call it that.
Right.
I mean, it
I don't
has
know
a whole new
that.
Meaning to the Kalapachi or something. I don't know. I haven't a clue. Anyway, carry on, sir, on this. But you're right, because we don't develop the infrastructure. We don't develop... I mean, the Imam is not only talking...
It's not only the material thing. It's who you become as a human
being
when you do this.
Exactly, in terms of the dignity of your mission.
It's about who you become as somebody who is using those blessings, those ne'mat, and he says it in the quote, I don't know if you know that we got to that part where he talks about, you know, you're doing kufr ne'mat.
Yes.
You're not dealing with the, you're not using the blessings that Allah has given you.
Exactly.
You know?
You're misusing them, actually.
Right. And so when that happens, guess what happens? Guess what Allah does then? What does he do? He takes away the blessings.
Of course he does, and he leaves you to yourself.
He says, "You I gave you the blessing. You do it.
Go ahead.
You know better than me.
Okay. Go ahead.
Please.
Exactly.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Kay. We'll see how far you get.
It's up to you.
And then he reminds you very nicely, in many surahs in the Quran, how many a nation has destroyed itself by distancing itself.
I want to add a little example here of this example. It's a little bit, you know, in parentheses. But there, I was reading recently a lot of rivayat. It said that if somebody goes after marrying a woman because of her money, then Allah will leave you to her and her money.
Very nice.
He says maybe I wanted to give you more money.
Huh? Maybe I wanted to give you more money.
Maybe I wanted to give you more money.
More money, but no.
You didn't go after iman. You didn't go marry somebody because of their iman.
Iman or piety or whatever.
Right.
You went for
You went for the money. So it's you and that money.
Well, it's very nice because, as you say, it's cause and effect. It's
and then,
the principle of the
and
thing.
And then there's another of it. It says you will always be zalil.
You'll always be zalil. You'll not have any dignity or respect.
The money that your wife or her family has to give.
Exactly.
Okay? So it's very similar concept.
It is.
Okay? You want to be dependent on kufar? Go ahead. Be dependent on them.
Sure.
Okay? Mm-hmm. See what you want to be dependent on me.
Exactly.
Now, this is, again, if somebody is not religious, somebody doesn't care about God, doesn't even believe in God, whatever, we're not even dealing with you because you don't get it, what we're talking about, right?
Exactly.
We're talking to people who claim. Who say we believe in God.
God.
Well, this is where it shows itself. This is where it shows itself. Mm.
So how about a little faith?
Right. And not all this crazy talk about, you know, if we just do this, if we just do that, if they just smile at us, if we just wink at them, you know, if we just, you know, rub a little elbows, and if we just, you know, deal with this, or if you give us a little bit of that, we'll give you a little bit of this. I'm not questioning normal interstate affairs, normal international relations between two states and two governments. This is normal affairs. You talk to everyone. You know, you...
No, that's an entire... Diplomacy is an entirely different
Diplomacy
field.
Is diplomacy. It has its place.
It has its
always,
place.
It's always there. The point is not to rely... As a Muslim. Don't rely on kafir. Don't rely on your rizq coming from, you know, appeasing the kafir.
Well, the point is this, my friend. The thing is that when we look at the life of the... This is why the life of the Prophet... We have to go back to that. When we look at the life of the Holy Prophet, peace be upon him, did he do that? I mean, all the kafirs of his time were saying to him, look,
We'll give you everything.
We'll give you whatever you want. The most beautiful woman, we'll give you that. You want power and position, we'll give you that. You want to be chief of everything, we'll give you that. We'll give you Makkah even. We'll give you the whole lot.
We'll give you all the money.
But just stop saying what you're saying. Just stop what you're doing, okay? And what did he say? Put the sun in my right hand, put the moon in my left hand. Yeah?
I can't stop.
Need I say any more?
Right. Now, this is the point. Mm. We have these examples. All of us, those who claim to be Muslims, know these stories.
We do.
We've read the Quran. We've read the Rivayat, whether it's Shia or Sunni.
Yes, these are...
Okay? Yeah. We've read them all.
Yeah.
Do we really believe them?
Well,
this is the thing. Do we really act on it in our own
lives?
When the rubber hits the road?
When
the going gets tough?
When the going gets tough?
You know, yeah. I'm not going to use other expressions.
Please don't,
right?
Don't. Because
right?
Other images start coming to mind.
So
yeah.
The point is that when Imam is talking about this, way back then, okay, he's giving us a principle. He's giving us this highway. He's giving us...
The road. Showing us the road.
A basic fundamental thing, which is, you know, it's better to be self-reliant and to, you know, have to work a little harder and to maybe have less of the things that you really think are really neat and cool.
Necessary, yeah.
And, you know, I really want that iPad, you know. Okay, well, maybe you won't get the latest model.
Sure.
Okay, but by the way, can I just say that anything you want in this world, you can find in Iran. Okay, I'm just giving this as a news.
Yeah, as a news.
Okay,
yes,
sanctions has no effect.
I've seen that in Tehran.
Right?
I've seen that in Tehran.
Anything
yeah.
that's produced anywhere in the world.
You will find it in Tehran.
You know, two days later it's in Tehran.
In 2 days,
at a reduced price.
Yes.
Okay?
Yes.
At a reduced price of what it's sold in the actual market.
Yeah, of course it is. It's cheaper.
And you understand, right?
I understand it because I've seen that. I've physically seen
it. So, you know, this is not something that's really...
No, you're not making that up.
Right. No. So, I don't know what it is that people are so crazy about. I think it goes back to one thing, which we've talked about many times before, which is that the main way in which Western powers have tried to dominate the Islamic world is through nurturing their own elites in Muslim worlds.
Exactly.
And how do they do that? They do that by making them the representatives of their business affairs in the home country, so that they can get percentages and that they can get the money from selling the Western goods in those countries.
Sure.
And this is how they run the affairs of things, and it's no different in Iran today as it was 40 years ago.
Well, on that note, Dr. Mahdi Tarabi, thank you for that, but we need to review our path on Sirat al-Mustaqim, honestly.
Especially if you say that you follow Imam Khomeini.
Thank you very much indeed for that, sir. And I just say to our listeners, I hope you benefited from the program. Thank you very much for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. May the peace and mercy and blessings of Allah be upon you all. Thank you for listening. And goodbye. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio. Allah, 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 Allah. این چیزی که انسان را مطمئن می‌کند این ذکر خداست. ذکر الله تطمئن القلوب. Be aware. The hearts find rest in Allah's remembrance.
Spring of truth. Allahu ya Allah subhanallah. Allahu ya Allah walhamdulillah. Allahu wa la ilaha illallah. Allahu ya Allah wallahu akbar. I invite you to listen to a short part of the book Sirr al-Salat, The Secret of Prayer, written by Imam Khomeini, on some of the secrets of recitation. And for that, like other parts of it, part of prayer, there are some stages and decrees according to the stages of the people of the worship and conduct we recited briefly. First, the ordinary recitation. Second, the spiritual recitation. Third, the recitation of the knowledgeable ones, and it is the translation of their own impression after having realized some of the Quran's reality stages. Fourth, the recitation of the people of the hearts, and it is the translation of the heart's conditions after having realized some of the reality of the Quran's stages. Fifth, and it is the recitation of the holy men, and four that there are in brief three stages.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum and welcome to another episode of Spring of Truth from IRIB English Radio. I am your host, Sayyid Ayman Rizvi. Imam Khomeini, peace and blessings on his soul, has said, Islamic revolution of Iran is a reflection of Ashura and the great divine revolution. If we pay attention to the history, we will find out that Ashura has really given power and energy to the revolution of Iran. Since on June 3rd, you know, we see that on June 3rd, 1963, Imam gave his speech on the day of Ashura. And then there was uprising on June 5th. There was a massacre. Many young people died. Even Imam was arrested in the due course. We see that in the history. He was exiled. He gave continuously speeches even when he was in Iran and even when he was exiled in Iraq and Turkey. Ya Hayyu Ya Qayyum, Ya Hayyu Ya Qayyum. His speeches were continuously talking about the message of Karbala and the message of struggle, the message of opposition to Taghut, the message of resistance against oppression, the message of resistance against arrogance. And we see that in the end, that after his so much of a powerful speeches and struggles with the Muslim community, there was a monarchy of 2,500 years which ended. Now, there are some similarities if we pay attention to both of the events, the event of Karbala and the event of revolution of Iran. In the beginning, Imam Hussein was alone. No one was listening to him in Medina or elsewhere. And here we have the same situation. Imam Khomeini was alone in his struggle. No one really was paying attention to his words, but he was struggling and he was giving speeches. Imam Hussein alayhi salam was also against corruption, as we see that the state of Medina, or the state, eventually was full of corruption at that time. And that was exactly happening in Iran at that time.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
This is for a better life. For a better life.
فرمود بعثت لأتمم مكارم الأخلاق.
The Holy Prophet of Islam says, I have been sent to complete noble manners.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. Dear brothers and sisters, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. You're welcome to For a Better Life with me, Javed Akbari. Well, today, this episode, we are going to discuss hope from different angles. We will try to focus on the concept of hope from the perspective of the Holy Quran, and also some other arguments and reasons put forth by scholars about the very concept. You know, you wake up in the early morning and yet there is nothing to motivate you sometimes to get out of bed, and you want to just be still, not to think or feel. Actually, it takes every ounce of energy to make yourself get out of bed, knowing that there is work to be done, finances to be managed, things to be accomplished, yet you don't truly desire anything at all to do something. You go on with your day and you meet people, some old, some new, going about their daily lives, yet there you are, smiling, watching others, thinking how much you would not like to be around anyone anymore. You smile, yet there is this ache in your chest that you cannot explain. No one can see you, feeling the pain of having no hope, of having hard time day and night, yet going through it all alone. And there's no one to sympathize with you, there's no one to understand you. So you have been going through hard time, and you have seen the bad going and to worst, and nothing changes. No good days, no solution to unresolved problems, no answered prayers, and you still pray hoping that the next time you lie down on your bed at night is finally the last time you close your eyes. So there is the desperate situation, there is hopelessness around you. And of course, so we are going to, this is just an explanation to help you understand what we are talking about. You know, sometimes our life is so much, you know, humdrum, it's so monotonous, it's so boring that we have no hope left in our life. But you know, hope is something that we need to have in our life in order to move ahead, in order to carry on with our lives. What is hope? Hope has been defined as an optimistic state of mind that is based on an expectation of positive outcomes with respect to events and circumstances in one's life, or with respect to the world at large, you know. As a verb, of course, its definitions include expect with confidence and to cherish a desire with anticipation. So this is what actually hope means. Now, what are some verses in the Holy Quran referring to the very concept, the concept of hope? The concept of hope in the Quran can be understood through key words such as Raja, Amal, and Tamanna. You know, these are the three main or key words that we can find in the Holy Quran. Let's focus on the words Raja. Raja is a word which specifically means hope. Now, Raja means aspiration, waiting for something that is loved. For example, the Quran says, قُلْ يَا عِبَادِيَ الَّذِينَ أَسْرَفُوا عَلَىٰ أَنفُسِهِمْ لَا تَقْنَتُ مِنْ رَحْمَةِ اللَّهِ إِنَّ اللَّهَ يَغْفِرُ الذُّنُوبَ جَمِيعًا إِنَّهُ هُوَ الْغَفُورُ الرَّحِيمُ. O my servants who have transgressed against themselves by sinning, do not despair of the mercy of Allah. Indeed, Allah forgives all sins. Indeed, it is He who is the forgiving, the merciful. Verse 53 of chapter Az-Zumar. And this verse of the Holy Quran actually focuses on losing hope. Okay, لا تقنطوا من رحمة الله. And there's also another verse which says لا تيأسوا من روح الله, which clearly states that we should not lose hope, we should not despair of Allah's mercy. As we said, there is also another word which is used in connection with the word Raja, with hope, and that word is the word Amal, which means desire. A wish that presupposes a long wait. Al-mal wal-banun zinatul hayati dunya wal-baqiyatul salihat khayrun inda rabbika thawaban wa khayru amala. The enduring good deeds are better to your Lord for reward and better for one's hope. You see? وَالْبَاقِيَاتُ الصَّالِحَاتُ خَيْرٌ عِنْدَ رَبِّكَ ثَوَابًا وَخَيْرُ أَمَلًا. The enduring good deeds are better to your Lord for reward and better for one's hope. Now, verse 46 of Surah Al-Kahf. Now, there's also another word which is also used and close, of course, coordination with, or maybe in association with the word hope. Of course, that word is tamanna, which means request, asking for something along with proper appreciation of its essence. Look at verse 24 of Surah An-Najm, and you'll find أَمْ لِلْإِنسَانِ مَا تَمَنَّ. Okay? أَمْ لِلْإِنسَانِ مَا تَمَنَّ. Is there anything for mankind to wish for or to cherish for or to hope for? Okay, obviously of these three mentioned terms, Raja, aspiration, is synonymous with the desired sincere and true wish, and is mentioned in the Quran in two fashions. Now, hope for the afterlife and enjoying God's mercy, to which all believers aspire. There's no doubt as to the fact that it is obligatory to put your trust in Allah, to hope, to keep your fingers crossed and wait for Allah's mercy. And also on that